This weekend starts right after this.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Are you ready for that solar eclipse? Jennifer Gashinka in for Gordon Deal on This Weekend, and here's what we have for you this hour. Some schools eliminating traditional A through F grades. Is that a good idea? A surprise medical bill can hit any of us anytime. What's the best way to handle the shock of that and the expense? The rise in white hate groups and what's fueling them, and the best apps to get you through Monday solar eclipse.
There's so many. They're so easy to create. Most of them have the same information. There were two that stuck out for me that I really liked. But as far as what you're going to find out, first of all, interactive maps. You type in your location. It tells you what time you'll get to see the eclipse.
That's Jefferson Graham of USA Today. He'll be along later in the show with details. Well, as kids start heading back to the classroom, here's something to ponder. The elimination of grades A through F and the scale that uses them. But what's several school systems have decided to try that. Joining us now, Jenny Anderson of Courts with the story. Jenny, where are grades being eliminated?
So I highlight one small private school in Utah, but there are entire school districts that are experimenting with this, and it is much more widespread in Canada, where all of the Ontario school districts have done away with this and adopted something called standards-based grading, but there are districts in Washington State, in Kentucky, in Vermont, and also in Washington that we see doing it in the United States.
Tell us about the one in Utah. How did that come about?
So it came about a new academic dean took over, and her job was to try to figure out how students were doing academically, and she had their grades, and she realized it didn't tell her anything about the students because it combines way too many things. You know, an 89 can be because you participate in class, because you did extra credit, because you're diligent, you turn up, you show up, you do good stuff, you're a good kid, or it could be because you're good at the content. And because that's not picked apart, she didn't know. She was looking at these grades and she thought, geez, if I'm looking at these grades and I can't figure out what they mean, parents aren't getting what they need out of looking at these grades. They don't know whether their kid is a math whiz or just a really diligent student.
I would imagine this was a huge adjustment for teachers.
And parents. I think there are a lot of stakeholders who are pretty wed to the A to F system. But in the case of Roland Hall, and you know, private schools have a lot of freedom in terms of what they can do because they don't get any state funding, they got a lot of buy-in from the teachers early on. They did it very slowly. They did it grade by grade. And the small group of sixth grade teachers, which were the first ones to adopt it, were the ones who were saying this A to F system is actually failing our students. Kids spend way too much time trying to game the system to get the A. You know, what do I have to do to get an A? Which is very different from, am I learning this material? What do I need to do to get better? Where am I strong? Where am I weak? That's what you want from a learner, that kind of metacognitive sense of where am I going with this rather than what, how many more points do I need to get an A? So the teachers in the first group were really on board, and then I think I got the sense they spent a lot of time getting buy-in from their very small groups of teachers. It is much harder on a system-wide level, for sure.
We are speaking with Jenny Anderson of Courts about some school systems dropping the A through F grading scale. Jenny, what are some of the ways that the grades are being replaced?
So what they did is they decided, they picked out what they thought was important. So they looked at their mission, and they said, what do we want kids to have? We want them to have academic mastery, so that's one component. Productivity, which is kind of how well you do your homework, you complete your assignments, and a sort of contributions, or it makes more sense to me to think about it as a citizenship type grade. How are you a group member? How empathetic are you? How much are you valuing inclusiveness? And so they took those three components, and within each of those three components, they have four levels, exceeding, meeting expectations, and so it goes in that level. And so it's much more, it gives you a lot more detail and fewer precise points, if that makes sense.
I would think, Jenny, this would be a good experiment for middle school, but once you hit high school, aren't colleges looking for the A through F rankings?
So the truth is, colleges have come out, the National Association, one of the National Associations of College Admissions Officers recently got together. They don't mind an alternate system, but parents don't believe that. And so what you're going to see happen over the next decades is more schools will move to this system, and those students will get accepted into the colleges they need. I think parents need evidence, and I totally understand that, to see that. The colleges have said there's a system called mastery-based grading, which is something used in a lot of private schools, and colleges really like that because what essentially presents to the college is a portfolio of your work. But I think you're right. Listen, we're a long way from there. I think parents don't believe it. It's a small group of colleges that are saying, you know, we're on board for this. It has to be a much bigger group of colleges saying we are on board with this. And I think the truth is people have to see the evidence. They have to see kids being accepted from these programs. And no one's going to really want to be the guinea pig for this or have their kids be the guinea pig for this. So I think it's tough. So it's very common in elementary. We're seeing it happen much more in middle school. And you'll definitely see, some pioneers at the high end in high school. But I do think it's probably a bit of an uphill battle to get that far.
Interesting stuff. Thank you so much, Jenny Anderson of Quartz.
Prices are for base buildings only. Do not include windows, doors, or accessories. Warning! Don't let your business get left behind in what is likely to be the biggest economic boom in recent history. If you need to build to grow your business, call General Steel today. Steel prices are expected to rise, but you can still lock in your price on a General Steel building if you call now. For example, a 40 by 60 foot building is still less than $25,000. Even an 80 by 150 foot building is under $99,000.
Imagine 12,000 square feet for under $99,000.
This building is designed for your needs, no wasted space. And you get the General's quality and 50-year structural warranty at a price you can afford. You can still save as much as half the cost and time of conventional construction by calling General Steel today. As much as half. So don't let rising steel prices put your project out of reach and stop you from making your company great. Call now. 877-61-STEEL.
It's not too late. Call.
877-61-STEEL. That's 877-617-8335.
Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Are you ready for that historic eclipse? It's coming up. It's pretty much all anyone's talking about these days. There's also some confusion, though, about how you should view it. Here to help, NASA scientist Dr. Michelle Thaller. Michelle, what are we going to see?
This has to be the most beautiful thing you can ever see in the sky. I'm not kidding. This will be my third, hopefully, total solar eclipse. I've seen two in the past, and they were so beautiful and so dramatic that I never was the same again. So you're actually going to see the moon move completely in front of the sun, totally cover up the sun, and the sky is going to go dark in the middle of the day. You're going to see some of the brighter stars come out. You'll be able to see the planets Mercury and Venus next to the sun. And the most amazing thing is you're going to be able to see the solar corona, which is this atmosphere at the sun that normally, I mean, it's always there, but normally the surface of the sun is so bright, it blanks it all out. And it looks like these beautiful streamers coming off the sun. And this is very hot gas, about a million degree gas right above the surface of the sun. And it makes for just the most wonderful experience to see this dark hole in the sky where the moon is covering up the sun and just see everything change around you. It's going to be wonderful.
How is it going to vary across the country, and at what time does this actually happen?
Well, so the thing is that everybody in the United States is going to at least see a partial eclipse. In many places, they will not actually see a complete coverage of the sun. So they'll see the moon move in front of the sun, but there'll always be a little bit of the sun showing. You know, it'll look sort of like a crescent moon, a very, very bright crescent moon that you do not want to look at directly. The NASA has set up a website, which is eclipse2017.nasa.gov. And if you go there, you'll actually be able to just, you know, wherever you are in the country, you'll be able to sort of highlight your location. It will tell you when the eclipse starts, when the middle of the eclipse is, when the moment of totality is, and when the eclipse finally ends. So go to the website. You'll find out exactly when all the dates are, all the times are.
We're speaking with NASA scientist Dr. Michelle Thaller. Michelle, how long approximately will this last? Are we talking minutes?
So totality, when it's actually dark and the moon is entirely in front of the sun, is going to last about 2.5 minutes. The whole event where the moon begins to move in front of the sun, but there's still a lot of the sun still showing, and then slowly it'll move across, and then after the total eclipse, it'll take a while for the moon to completely move away. The entire process takes about 4 hours. So there's going to be a wonderful excitement through the day, about 2 hours ahead of time, where you're going to start to see the moon moving in front of the sun. The most dramatic part, the totality, about 2.5 minutes, and then kind of a denouement, kind of, you know, the coming to a close as the moon moves away. So if you really want to be part of the whole thing, I'd say leave 4 hours.
Okay. The big question, how do we look at this?
So the best way you can do this is get a pair of safe eclipse viewing glasses. And on our website, again, the website is eclipse2017.nasa.gov, you will find a list of vendors that we know have safe glasses. One of the things we're telling people to look for is when you order glasses somewhere, when you buy them, look for the address of a distributor in the United States, because we have seen some eclipse glasses coming in from overseas that don't meet the safety requirements that we'd like. So make sure, you know, that's the best way to have eclipse glasses. But if you don't get eclipse glasses, there are all these other fun ways you can observe the eclipse. And the easiest way, really, that this is so easy, is just punch a little hole in something, a piece of paper, cardboard, something with little holes like a cheese grater works really well. Ritz crackers actually have little holes punched in them. And if you let the sun shine through those little holes will actually focus the sunlight, and you'll be able to see a little image of the sun projected down on the ground. So literally, take a Ritz cracker, hold it up, let the sun shine through the holes, and look on the ground, and you'll see little crescents where the holes are, which is how much of the sun is covered up. It's called a pinhole camera. And you can do this with anything that has a little hole in it. So that's a very simple, very easy and safe way to see the eclipse. Now, the thing that's worth mentioning for people in the Nashville area is when the eclipse is total, when the moon is fully in front of the sun and you can see the solar corona, it's safe to look at without anything else. You can look in the sky with your unaided eye. This is the only time in your life you'll be able to look at the sun, and it'll be safe, you know, with your unprotected eyes, only during totality, when all of the surface of the sun is covered.
NASA scientist Dr. Michelle Thaler. Sounds like there's going to be a run on Ritz crackers this weekend. This portion of the show is brought to you by Lexington Hotels. Hello Rewards is our way of saying thank you to guests at Lexington and Red Lion Hotels. Enjoy our best rates and personalized perks. Book your hotel stay today. Unfortunately, many of us get hit with an unexpected medical bill somewhere along the line. What to do? Veronica Dagger of the Wall Street Journal is here with some tips on how to get help if you can't pay. Veronica, why is medical debt so prevalent?
Well, you know, it's becoming more and more of an issue because individuals are often bearing a greater portion of their medical bills than before because, as you know, many insurers are cutting back on payments and more companies expect employees to pay higher deductibles and copays. So that means for the consumer, higher bills.
And we've been told to save 6 months of money for emergency funds, but sometimes these bills go way beyond 6 months.
Totally, and a lot of people aren't even able to save that 6 months of emergency savings, so that makes it trickier.
Veronica, you get a bill that you weren't expecting. What's step number one?
So step number one would be to negotiate. Sometimes simply asking for a discount can get you a discount. I spoke to several different financial advisors and billing experts, and they said, just ask for it. If you are in a position to pay in cash, sometimes you can get a discount that way. I heard as much as even 50% off the bill. But more realistically, it's probably going to be closer to 30 to 35% reduction. Offering paying cash can be one way to do that. Also, just asking for getting money off. And another tip to go with that is the sooner you contact the billing office, the more amenable they will be to working with you. So sometimes you think, well, if I just put this off, it'll go away, and it's probably not going to be the case. So if you get in touch with them early, show good faith that you're willing to pay the bill, but you need to find a price that works for you a little bit better. You'll have a better shot at doing that. Also, it's always better to try to negotiate the rate before you get the procedure. So calling ahead and talking to the billing office and seeing what's possible can help get you a lower price.
We're speaking with Veronica Dagger of the Wall Street Journal about some medical bills. Veronica, does it help to arrange a payment plan? Will they work with you on that?
They will. Yeah, most places will, especially the hospitals, they're willing to do that. So, for example, it makes sense to ask for the payment plan. Often those payment plans are about a 0% interest rate, so make sure you ask for that because that is a possibility. Usually it is much better to go with the payment plan at the hospital to pay the bill than it is to put a charge on your credit card and then pay your credit card's high interest rate to pay off that debt. So always try to go for the lower interest debt whenever possible.
Veronica, you mentioned earlier mistakes on bills. What if you get stuck with someone out of network that you weren't expecting? Is this happening more?
It is happening more. You know, so you think you've got everything settled, your labs and your procedure is going to be all in network, but for some reason your lab bill comes back much higher than you expected because they accidentally put something out of network. Well, if that's the case, fight back. Say, you know, hey, you guys told me this is going to be in network, and say, you know, you want it charged to the in network rate, not the out of network rate. The good news is that in certain states, like California, for example, just recently passed a law, I think in July, that says, you know, if a consumer goes to an in-network facility and is seen by an out-of-network provider, he or she is only responsible for in-network costs. So that's another element to this to consider. So there's a couple websites, like Consumers Union has a list of resources for each state that you can check out to see what your rights and privileges are in different states and what kind of pushback you can have depending on if you're going in or out-of-network.
And these big medical bills certainly can ding your credit if you're not careful too, right?
Yeah, they really can, you know, and some medical providers have really gotten trigger happy in terms of turning the bills over to collection. Sometimes as short as 30 days, you'll see, you know, you'll get a bill and 30 days later, if you didn't pay, you'll find out it went to collections and you're sitting there, you know, what the heck is going on? Well, the good news is starting into September, the three major credit reporting firms, Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion, will now set a 180-day waiting period before reporting supposedly delinquent medical bills and debts on your credit report. And also, as part of that legislation, once that medical debt is paid, those credit firms will remove it from your report, so your report won't be dinged anymore. So that's some really good news. Gives consumers a bit more time to pay without having the negative impact of having their credit hurt if they can't pay almost immediately.
Thanks, Veronica. Veronica Dagger of the Wall Street Journal. It's 30 minutes after the hour on This Weekend.
You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and defense. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today.
Last weekend's violence in Charlotte raises the question, is there a rise in white supremacist groups in this country? Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor at The Wall Street Journal, has examined this question and joins us now. Jerry, can we tell if there are more hate groups now than there have been in recent years?
I think the question has been, are there more hate groups or are they simply more visible and more active in some ways? And I think the one way to look at this is to look at some data that the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is an organization that tracks hate groups of various kinds in the country, has put together. And what that data shows is that over the last year or so, the number of hate groups has been pretty steady. It's up in some categories, down in other categories. There's certainly been a big jump in anti-Islam hate groups, but Confederate and neo-Nazi groups, not large changes. And in fact, the sheer number of such groups is down a little bit from the historic high in 2011. And similarly, the number of incidents, say for a spurt in, you know, sort of rallies and things like that after President Trump won, when some of these groups were celebrating his victory, has actually gone down a little bit. So the picture that you get is of a range of groups that are perhaps more active and certainly more visible in some ways, but not a sign that the actual movement is growing.
Jerry, is it not difficult to quantify the size and scope of some of these groups? Are they somewhat underground sometimes?
Well, I think, but at some point, you know, given the way they mobilize, which is to say to use social media and things like that, which is what all politically tinged groups do these days, it's possible to see them there. And I think that I think the Southern Poverty Law Center has done a pretty good job of figuring out how to do that. And, there's undoubtedly some activity going on below the radar screen. But I think in the overall sense of kind of the big trend line, I think the picture that emerges is pretty clear. And again, that seems to be a picture of not necessarily a growing movement, but one that maybe is just more active and a little more bold than it was over the last couple of years.
We're speaking with Jerry Seib, Executive Washington Editor at the Wall Street Journal. Jerry, what's the impact, perhaps, of the effort in many cities to get rid of Confederate statues?
Well, that's kind of become a bit of a trend in the South, where political leaders in various states have decided for a variety of reasons, but mostly because of some public pressure, to try to get rid of things that seem to memorialize the Confederacy. And I mentioned a minute ago that the white nationalist groups seem to be more visible and more active. Well, this is one of the big reasons why. They're responding to a movement to kind of expunge some tributes to the Confederacy out of the South, and that's in fact what happened in Charlottesville. It's what's happened in New Orleans. It's happened in a couple of other places. And so there is an action-reaction cycle that we're in the middle of now, and that's one of the reasons I think you're seeing more tension and more activity from groups that have actually been there all along.
And do you think a rally that turns deadly like Saturday's actually spurs these groups to do it more, or is it going to be reined in by cities and colleges and places that say we're not having this free speech thing?
You know, I think that's hard to tell at this point. I suspect it in the short term it encourages these groups to not be intimidated, show they're not intimidated, and to be more active. And at the same time, would certainly be likely to encourage counter-protesters to do the same, and so you might have a short-term escalation of tensions. I think long-term, it's probably the lesson from Charlottesville to cities and states where this sort of thing could happen is going to be more vigilant and to do more to control these public statements so they don't get spin out of control. And so that may be, I think there may be more activity, but better control of the activity.
Jerry Seib, Executive Washington Editor at the Wall Street Journal. Jennifer Koshinka in for Gordon Deal on this weekend. Not sure when and how to view the solar eclipse. Don't worry, there's an app for that. In fact, a bunch of apps for that. Jefferson Graham of USA Today has the latest. Jefferson, I would assume these apps must be in demand.
There's so many. They're so easy to create. Most of them have the same information. There were two that stuck out for me that I really like. But as far as what you're going to find out, first of all, interactive maps. You type in your location. It tells you what time you'll get to see the eclipse. That's important because it's going to be at a different time all over the country, right? It's going to be in Oregon, in Newport, Oregon, where it starts at 10:15 in the morning Pacific time. And in 90 minutes, it's flying across the country and ending in South Carolina at what is in the 2 o'clock hour. It's going faster than the speed of light, right? So you get to figure out, you know, what time you'll get to watch the eclipse. There's weather for your location because there might be clouds. You want to know if you've got a cloud cover. And all sorts of other stuff, the history of the eclipse and why it's important and when the next eclipse is. And so I'll take a pause for a second, but the two best ones are the Smithsonian Eclipse app and something called Eclipse Safari.
So what do those two apps do that others don't?
They have more information. They're just better. There's just more stuff in there. They'll keep you busy. You could still use them to read up about the eclipse and find out, great eclipses through history, when the next one is, why it's important, how it works, stuff like that. fun videos to watch, too. Eclipse Safari has a section in it with a live feed. It goes direct to NASA TV, and it'll show you the live feed of the eclipse, which will look better than what you're seeing with your eye, because it'll be, you know, they're going to use giant cameras. And it also has a Twitter feed in there. Now, yes, you could go to NASA TV on your own, and you can go to Twitter on your own. But they've got all the eclipse-related tweets in one place. And it's free.
Are there any apps that you think people should stay away from?
Now the app that I want people to stay away from is called the Solar Filter Glasses. I didn't get the title exactly right, but you get the gist. They're saying don't bother and buy solar glasses like everybody tells you that you need to wear, because the sun is so bright it could blind you. Just hold the phone up to the sun and look through your phone. And that's all you need to do. This is what they're telling you. It costs a dollar. But the whole idea is that your eyes are supposed to be protected. You're supposed to be wearing glasses in both eyes. You're not supposed to hold the phone up to your face and think that that's going to do the trick. It's not going to do the trick. You could spend a dollar and have some eye damage, or you could just say, I'm not going to do it at all. You know? So that's my recommendation.
It must be tricky to figure out which glasses work and which don't, right?
Well, Amazon recalled some glasses that they found out were faulty. I believe that whatever they're selling now is not going to be faulty, but if you could even find them. You know, there are five brands that were approved by NASA. I don't have the names of them right here, but all you have to do is look it up and just make sure you're getting one of the approved brands.
Thanks, Jefferson. Jefferson Graham of USA Today. It's 14 minutes before the hour. Jennifer Kishinka in for Gordon Deal. And this portion of the show is brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The best place to start or grow your business is at michiganbusiness.org. Contact them today. Wendy's has become the mean girl of Twitter. As this morning's Gordon Deal reports, the chain is serving up some sassy retorts.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal staff writer Julie Jargon. She's written a piece entitled, You Want Snark with Those Fries? No one is safe from Wendy's tweets. All right, this is a really fun story. Explain what you found here.
What I found was that Wendy's has really engaged with their followers on Twitter. A lot of them have asked Wendy's to roast them, and they oblige with some really witty responses. But they're also going after competitors when it comes to trying to defend their turf as the fast food chain that has been serving fresh beef for many, many years. They've gone after people like McDonald's and other competitors that are trying to edge into their turf.
It strikes me from reading your story that nobody is winning at social media right now, at least in the fast food space, more so than Wendy's. Give some examples of their exchanges with rivals.
Yeah, so for example, one of the ones that got the most attention was when McDonald's a few months ago announced that it would start using fresh instead of frozen beef in its Quarter Pounders. Wendy's tweeted at them saying, so you'll still use frozen beef in most of your burgers in all of your restaurants? Asking for a friend. They've also gone after Burger King and Hardee's, which have imitated Wendy's long-running 4 for $4 deal. For example, when Hardee's tweeted about that deal, Wendy's said, we usually prefer the original to a knockoff, but hey, you do you.
Oh, man.
And they got into a little bit of a back and forth with Hardee's, and then Hardee's finally blocked them on Twitter.
That must be the ultimate compliment for Wendy's, right?
Exactly.
That's clear sign that you've won.
You've gotten under their skin.
Yeah, definitely. But ultimately, obviously, they're looking for publicity / sales. Any evidence that that the terrific or funny tweets are translating into bigger sales?
The company does say that it has translated into increased visits from existing customers and visits from new customers. They don't, you know, break that out on a very granular level, but they have been posting 17 consecutive quarters of same-store sales increases in the U.S.
Wow.
And some other outside evidence of this is some brand tracking firms have found that their brand perception scores have been increasing among that particular younger age group that they're going after with these tweets, kind of 18 to 21-year-old group. And some of the customers that I talk to just anecdotally have told me that they've increased their visits to Wendy's because they appreciate this online banter.
Wow. Anybody else like in that space indicate that Twitter works for them? I mean, I guess everybody's got to have a presence at this point, but anybody doing it like Wendy's?
Well, you know, there are some other companies that get a little bit sarcastic and humorous in their banter with followers, but no one could identify anyone that can be quite as vicious sometimes as Wendy's is, especially when it comes to targeting competitors, not just kind of being playful with their followers, but actually, you know, trying to engage their competitors and call them out the way Wendy's
does. Well, I guess McDonald's and Burger King seem to be feeling the sting or have their tails between their legs because they wouldn't even talk to you about all this.
They wouldn't talk. They wouldn't talk to me at all about it. And the only company that talked a little bit about it was Chipotle, because one of the followers of Wendy's that has tried to get roasted by various fast food chains got a response from Wendy's, and he wasn't able to get McDonald's or Burger King to roast him.
Oh.
And he goaded Chipotle into trying to roast him, and they just tweeted back saying, no, that's too mean. And Chipotle just said that they try to take a high road approach when engaging with people on social media.
That's Gordon Deal talking with the Wall Street Journal's Julie Jargon. Any winners of the weekend's Powerball drawing will face a big question: accept the more than $500 million jackpot a little bit at a time or in a lump sum? The answer probably comes down to this. It depends what you want that money to do for you. If you dream of getting the money all at once, it's helpful to recall the many lottery winners who have gone on spending sprees and quickly blown their winnings. Others have made risky and even illegal investments that destroyed their wealth. That's one reason many experts recommend consulting a fee-only financial advisor and drawing up a plan for what to do with the windfall. Powerball jackpot winners have the choice of receiving their prize as a one-time lump sum cash payment or in annual payments over 30 years. Of course, taxes must be paid no matter how you get the money. Most winners take the lump sum because they want control of the entire amount right away, and that could well be the right financial decision if you invest a large portion of the funds for a long period of time. Two-thirds of the time, investing a windfall immediately yields better returns than putting smaller fixed dollars to work at regular intervals. That'll do it for this hour. I'm Jennifer Kishinka. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.